You're tuned to 90.7 KRWG Las Cruces, KRXG Silver City. I'm Leora Zeitlin. This is Intermezzo. First time in many months, I'm having an interview by Zoom, and I am delighted to welcome Heather Dials, soprano, who's living here in Las Cruces, and I'll have a lot more to say about her in a moment, and Daniel Vega Albela, artistic director of Camerata del Sol, our newest regional chamber ensemble. And full disclosure, my daughter, Amalia Zeitlin, is the executive director of Camerata del Sol. Welcome to you both.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here.
It's good to have you, Heather Dials and Daniel Vega Albela. Camerata del Sol is in the midst of a season of short mini concerts that led up to Easter during the Lent season and is continuing now at churches and elsewhere. A short, beautiful concert with some wonderful arias and three instrumentalists. So it's a very small and intimate performance experience. Heather, you're a singer who made your debut with the Santa Fe Opera at the age of 12. That's just awesome. And then you were one of the youngest singers admitted to the Curtis Institute at 17 in Philadelphia. And you've gone on to have a wonderful career singing on many, many stages and with many wonderful singers. And now you're making your home here. You're teaching at the El Paso Conservatory of Music and Performing. So welcome, Heather Dials.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here.
Yeah, so this Easter program includes two arias that I think we'll focus on in terms of the music. One from Bach, from the St. Matthew's Passion, and then a beautiful aria of Handel, and then a few selections from Messiah, which many people will recognize. But let's talk about the Bach first. It's a short text of asking for mercy, and it is just gorgeous. And Heather, I would just love to hear your thoughts about this piece. And yeah, let's start there.
Well, anytime I can sing Bach, I am so excited, especially the St. Matthew's Passion. During this time of year, it is such a gorgeous, gorgeous piece of music overall for everyone involved. And we need to hear more of Bach these days. Erbarme dich, mein Gott, is the piece we have extracted from this great work. Erbarme dich, mein Gott means have mercy on me, God. And then it goes on to say, look at my tears falling so bitterly. I'm crying from my heart, from my soul. Please have mercy on me, Lord. So I imagine when I sing it that I'm either Jesus on the cross or perhaps a disciple watching him or even Mary, his mother, watching him. So everyone knows the story of Jesus on the cross, and that's what this piece is about.
And you sing it, because I've now seen one of the recordings, with so much feeling, so much feeling. And I know that, of course, any musician is pouring emotion into their performance in ways to evoke that emotion for the listener. And I really, really felt your grief and passion in that performance. So having you say that you're imagining any of these figures in that story really brings that to life.
It helps me as a singer to have a story behind. That's how I portray music, is that I always have a story behind whatever it is. It can sometimes be personal, or it can be directly related to the piece that we're doing.
Yeah.
But yes, imagining that, it helps me portray the words much better. You know, without the words, singing is that's what it's about. You know, we're trying to give the story, so that's the most important thing for me as a singer,
yeah,
to have a backstory.
And it's interesting because there's only a few words, but the music goes on for quite a ways. So that music is really drawing out the depths of the emotion, I think. Daniel Vega Albela, I want to bring you in as one of the instrumentalists because it's a very, very small ensemble playing a Baroque piece, which requires a different style than other later stages of music. Do you want to add your view or your thoughts on what's happening on your part of the stage?
On my part of the stage, I'm basically trying my best to keep up with Heather because she has such a powerful voice. And there are a lot of unisons that happen. It's actually a famous violin and voice duet, and it can be performed, and it is performed as sort of a stand-alone piece oftentimes because it just kind of works as a stand-alone piece. And originally, we got together with the instrumentalists only to rehearse the piece, to have a feel for it. And we tried it a couple of ways. First time we tried it, as they would now say these days, the romantic way. So we used vibrato and the kind of sound production that most of us that go to music school as string players are accustomed to do. We're still training in the romantic tradition. Although nowadays, a lot of people are going farther from that when approaching Baroque music. There's obviously an emphasis on performance practice. And then we decided, okay, why don't we try to do a little less vibrato, be a little bit more sober in terms of the sound production. So we played it like that, and we're like, that sounds really nice. And then we said, well, we're just gonna wait for Heather to start singing, and then we can make a decision. And as soon as she started singing, I realized that we needed to be playing more with a fuller, more romantic. I hate to use that term because I think that Bach is such a universal composer that I think it's unfair to say, oh, it's a romantic interpretation of Bach. But I guess for lack of a better term, we went for more of that romantic interpretation. So I'm thinking of just keeping up with Heather.
So I want to just clarify. Oh, sorry, Heather, did you want to say something?
Oh, I did see that the piece has been done with cello and violin and orchestra, even without a singer, you know, because it's written so well and so beautifully, you still get that feeling, you know, even without a voice. So it really is actually a duet between Daniel and I, mostly, right? I mean, it's back and forth between the voice and the violin. So if you really listen for that in the piece, if you know what to listen for. So I'm glad you brought that up, Daniel. Thank you.
And Heather always wins in this duet, no matter how hard I try.
Oh, my. You know, I want to just clarify for the listeners, when you say romantic, that's a capital R. That's deriving from the romantic era of music and the style of music that emerged from that. Not romantic in the sense of, you know, hearts and flowers and Valentine's Day, although related to that. But it is a fuller sound. And as you said, generally more vibrato. And that's a stylistic issue that every concert, anytime one has to make in preparing for a performance of Baroque music or even classical music is, do you play, you know, adhering to the style of the time that Bach wrote it, or do you add in some of the techniques and traditions that followed? But I would say, having heard one of the performances you've done, it sounded more Baroque to me. There was not heavy, heavy use of vibrato, which I was watching for, but it was definitely a beautiful full sound.
Well, I think it's also important to remember that, as Heather mentioned, you know, a lot of what Bach writes, we can put in the compartment of absolute music.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that when you're dealing with absolute music, you can, as long as you are making an honest effort to to bring forth what that music evokes in you. I think that you can choose to go for a more heavy-handed, more full style, or you can choose for a much more sober, less vibrato, etc., etc. But I think that most of what Bach writes, even the oratorios, which clearly have a story, are very, very much in the category of absolute music. And I think that once you're dealing with absolute music, you go into the discussion of aesthetics, and it's basically like going down the rabbit hole. nobody ever wins that discussion.
Well, you know, so much of what Bach wrote, he wrote for the church. So that was the context in which it was written, and it was performed, and it was heard, and it was loved. And now it's, you're bringing it back into a church setting and a religious seasonal setting. But of course, it is absolute music that anybody can listen to and love, regardless of where they're hearing it or what their religion is. So from that, let's move to the Handel, particularly the aria, which I'm going to let you say again, Heather, because I'm going to mess it up. And it's from actually an opera, I believe.
It is.
Yeah. And yet it works very beautifully in a more Easter themed concert, because it's a plea for freedom, which I think can be read as both literal freedom and spiritual freedom and release from suffering. I'd love you both to talk about that. Also, gorgeous and heart-wrenching aria.
It is. it's in Italian, and the pronunciation is Lascia ch'io pianga, and it's from the opera Rinaldo. And a lot of people do it during Easter time, because it's basically saying the same thing that Erbarme dich, mein Gott, is saying. It's saying, please, God, have mercy. Look at my tears falling. Please have mercy on me. It's asking the same question. And it's always a treat to sing Handel. I mean, if you want to learn anything as a singer, Handel will teach it to you. You know, and that's what's been so wonderful about singing all this Baroque music. I've sung a lot of Verismo, you know, a lot of Bel Canto, and I love going back to the Baroque, because you kind of have to strip away all the extra. And it's very exposed. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what this aria is about. It's a very exposed music. It's slow. It's about the words. And I think in Baroque, there's a sense of holding back with that music. You don't want to be like Verismo, like, just pouring out all the emotion like you would see in a Verismo opera. There's some of this holding back. And to me, that can be even more beautiful and even more emotional. It is quite a gorgeous, gorgeous aria. I think most singers want to sing it. It's actually written for mezzo, and I'm a soprano. And the Erbarme dich, mein Gott, is written for contralto usually. So it's been really a treat to sing all these different voice types and to sing the Handel. Do you have anything to say about the Handel, Daniel?
Yes, I am a huge fan of opera. I've been a huge fan of opera for many, many years. As a matter of fact, before the pandemic hit, I go with my wife, Crystal, and some friends to the Santa Fe Opera. And they have, I believe it's a 9-week season over the summer. But for 2 of those weeks, they do all of the productions that they do throughout the season back to back. So every season, they prepare 5 different operas. And on 2 of the 9 weeks, they present one of the operas each day. And so for the last 3 years, we've been going there because it's a great opera company. It's a great place. They always have wonderful artists. And as I said, I fell in love with opera at a rather young age. My parents didn't really listen to a lot of opera as I was growing up. But when I moved to New York to study music, that's when I first discovered opera, and it really was love at first hearing. And particularly Baroque opera is something that I tend to listen more than other types of opera. Not that I don't like other types of opera. I love classical opera. I love romantic opera. Who can't love some Puccini, of course? But I think that to me, there's something really special about Baroque opera. Well, first of all, it is the birth of opera during the Baroque. It has this spirit of this great discovery, which is very interesting because the Baroque guys thought that Greek drama was actually opera. And this is why there's so many Greek themes in Baroque opera. And the reason they thought that the Greeks had invented opera was because in their plays, there's always a choir. Mm-hmm. And the choir interjects, at different points during the play and so on and so forth. So these Baroque guys, the Florentine camerata, were having these get-togethers where they would talk about art and the direction of art, and they started getting into Greek drama, and they thought it was opera. So they basically invented opera by mistake. but it's just a great period in the history of music, because opera becomes such a huge force, such a huge influence in the development of all musical styles. And so I have always really loved Baroque opera, and I guess by Baroque opera, most of the time we're going to mean Handel, because he was the king of Baroque opera. By the way, during one of the years that we were in the Santa Fe Opera, we got to watch Alcina, which is, again, one of my favorite operas. And in terms of our ensemble, Baroque opera is ideal because of the reduced numbers. You know, we can't do an opera by Puccini because you need a full orchestra, you need brass, you need percussion, you need woodwinds, you need a very large group for that. But Baroque opera is very, very accessible to an ensemble like Camerata del Sol. And so we had been wanting to offer a program of Baroque operas, and that, of course, is still in the planning. This is just a tiny little sample, but we do want to do a full program of Baroque operas at some point, because they're so beautiful, and again, you know, the ensemble that we have lends itself perfectly for this, and this specific aria has been on my bucket list of pieces that I have wanted to be doing forever. So I am grateful that I can say I got to perform this beautiful aria.
It is a beautiful aria, and it really worked, as I said, so perfectly in the theme of this church and Easter season concert.
Interestingly enough, that particular song, aria, is also set to a different set of words. And Baroque guys would do this a lot because they were really into the whole concept of the affect. So the theory of the affect is that a certain piece will evoke certain feelings because of the way it's written, because of the key in which it is written, a number of other factors. They were obsessed with this whole idea of the affect. So they would use a lot of these arias or pieces interchangeably to suit different situations. So there's another version of this aria where it's not free me from my sorrow, but it says, the words say, do not grab the rose by the thorn, something like that. One chooses one's own pain. So I just thought it's interesting that that there are those words also associated with that that specific aria.
Yeah, I read that too, that Handel wrote it with some words and then he changed the words for a different context.
And that happened a lot with those pieces. It's like today we have certain songs that are top 40, you know. Everybody knew that melody or that poem or that idea. And like Daniel was saying, it was passed around. Mm-hmm. And then you'd have different singers. And singers, you know, back in those days, they'd let us just make up stuff. And I do that. Each time it's different. Right, Daniel? When we do it. Each time it's different. I'll add a different, and he'll add something different, and we'll add little Baroque things here and there, and it's fun. And that's the way it used to be. Singers would come, and each singer would have their own cadenzas, you know? And so it makes it fun and different each time. It's not always the same aria. So that's fun about Baroque music as well. It's a bit like jazz in that way. You show up and you can make some things up. You know, usually like with Verismo or, you know, Puccini, you look at that, you do what's written, right? And we think of Baroque that way. We think it's very stringent and you have to do it. And yes, in the beginning, but then you can start to add and have fun. So that's what's been really fun. I do feel like we have this little troupe, the way they used to do it back in the old days, like he was saying. You'd go around with this troupe of musicians and it would be different each time. So it's been really fun. Yeah. I've enjoyed it so much.
Heather, have you sung these arias in other contexts?
No, not the first two, not the Erbarme dich mein Gott. That was brand new for these guys. And the Lasciak io pianga. Like I said, they're written for lower voice because I'm a soprano.
Right.
But the Handel, of course, I had done the soprano solo a few times.
The Messiah. Messiah tunes. Wonderful.
Yes.
And you've used the term verismo a few times, which is referring to a certain stage of opera history, I think, and style. Later, like romantic, post-romantic, I forget.
Yes. Well, Pagliacci is the Leoncavallo. That opera is the perfect example of verismo. It's the exact opposite of, I guess, I'm using it as an example because it's the exact opposite of what you would expect in Baroque, you know? Baroque seems to be very stringent, and whereas verismo, at least emotionally, whereas verismo is all about emotion and being real and imitating life, Baroque is about, it's about pulling back and making beauty. So it's a totally different, they're opposites, I guess.
Yeah, I think of the Baroque as a less is more, right? The idea of less is more, Yeah.
I do think it is a tension that builds up in the Baroque. The holding back of the emotion is what I think builds the emotion in Baroque music. So,
well, this has been wonderful, and we should wrap it up. But I look forward to speaking with both of you again in the future. I've been speaking with Heather Diles, a soprano who is performing right now in these weeks with Camerata del Sol, our regional chamber ensemble. Daniel Vega Albela has been my other guest in a series of concerts at churches and other places for this leading up to Easter and post-Easter season, music of Bach and Handel. We didn't even really talk about the Messiah tunes. which of course are much more famous, and Daniel, in some of the performances, you've done a little unaccompanied Bach as well. So wonderful to have you both. Heather, I'm looking forward to, in a future interview, hearing a little bit more about your background. I know you've performed with Leonard Bernstein, Edo DeVard, Michael Tilson Thomas, many of the top conductors, and on many, many, many opera stages. So I look forward to hearing more in the future. And thank you both for coming in on Zoom.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you. Such a pleasure.